This is the Empower Podcast, released September 8th, 2019. Episode 457. Dottie Ernest Anti-Frost.
Welcome to the Amp Hour. I'm Dave Jones from the EEV blog.
And I'm Chris Gamble of Contextual Electronics.
Who will no doubt tell us all about his camping experience.
Well, actually, Dave, I did that in a past episode of the Amp Hour, so you can go and listen to that.
Oh, did we?
Well, I did, yeah. I mean,
oh, right, okay. Well, that's...
yeah, right. Yeah, I mean, that's... I mean, I'm happy to talk about it here, but yeah, we did like kind of like a recap with... Alvaro from the Unnamed Reverse Engineering Podcast, and then also Mike.
Right, I didn't know you did a recap. I thought it was just like, yeah, interviewing people there.
No, it was like a last day of camp thing, and, you know, it's kind of...
Right, okay.
It's a little navel-gazy, you know, like a little introspective. And I never really know if like people like that, because it's like, well, here's this event that people didn't get to go to. We were kind of talking about everything that was happening, but, but yeah. Synopsis is, it was fun. I spent a little too much time on my talk, and so I didn't get to experience everything. Yeah, I wasn't
okay,
as prepared.
Well, we spent too much time preparing on your talk at the camp.
At the camp, yeah, that was
well,
on me.
Well, there's your problem.
Yeah, of course, of course. You know, it's like, so it's actually this thing where, you know, you give talks too, and it was like, I have this this very optimistic view on life where I'm like, oh, well, I'll learn more things if I really stretch myself on a talk topic.
Right.
And that is correct. I did stretch myself quite a bit. But that meant I was also quite stressed. And the talk is now online. People can watch it. It's, yeah. So it's basically about how I've been learning RF stuff and my journey with that. And, Mr. Jeffrey Kaiser of, MightyM.com was very kind and gave me tons of advice and help. So from that perspective, it's actually great. You know, talking through a lot of issues, but, a little stressful on the old, you know, getting up in front of a crowd and the internet and stuff like that.
Yeah, it reminds me of my talk I gave to like over 1,000 at the DevCon thing. This is way back in the early days. One of my first field recording for the Amp Hour when I recorded from the hotel room. In where was I? In Silicon Valley somewhere. Anyway.
You're talking about that's Renaissance, right?
Renaissance DevCon.
Yeah, right.
That was 2010. Maybe.
No, really? Wow.
I think so. It was 2010 or 2011.
It was definitely before you guys had kids, I think, because you wouldn't have traveled otherwise. Or maybe you were just having kids.
No. We just found out, like, she was pregnant like a week before we left or something. And we almost didn't leave because she was like going, I don't think I can get on a plane for 14 hours or whatever, you know.
Right, like, which is legit, yeah.
And so, but we made it, and it was okay. She just didn't go on any of the rides at Disneyland, though, because we went because our hotel was just around from Disneyland, you know.
Right, right.
Just around the street from Disneyland, so we went to Disneyland, and she was so looking forward to going on, you know.
Yep, yep.
And she just had to go on the kiddie rides
The Dumbo. The Dumbo cups, whatever.
Yeah, the teacups and you know, and one of the rides broke down. I love when the rides break down. It was one of those dark rides, you know, where you hop in the buggy and you go through. You know, and when they break down, you get to hop out and they turn the lights on and you get to see, you know, like actually behind the scenes. Of how it all works.
I'm pretty I'm not a Disney person. I went as a kid and my family likes it, but I'm not a huge fan. However, I got to have lunch with an Imagineer a couple weeks ago.
Yep.
A couple months ago, cool. I get to now. And he was telling me about the new Star Wars land that's there. And oh man, that sounds cool.
It sounds cool. I've heard it's a flop, though. I heard no one's turning up.
But really? Oh, okay.
I've heard it's really good. Yeah.
Well, the thing that was really exciting to me was like you can go and like make like it's like a Build-A-Bear workshop, but you do it with droids. It's like a
droid
workshop. You go and like pay, you have to pay like $100-some and you get to take it with you. You build it up, you design it yourself, whatever, you take it with you. But the thing that I really liked about it, and the thing that's kind of techie about it, is it's got Bluetooth inside, and the Bluetooth and the little droid basically responds to these beacons that are all over the park. And so it gets like real excited when it's in like the rebel territory, and real scared when like Like
that's pretty cool.
What are they called? Like stormtroopers go by and stuff. And yeah, I just think that kind of like it feels magical. You know, I like that idea.
Yeah, it does. It feels real. Yeah, that's very cool.
Yeah. So I don't know. I'm going to be out in LA area for SuperCon in November, and I might just have to slip by there. I don't know. We'll see.
You might have to slip. Why not?
Do it.
Anyway, I don't know. Before we got sidetracked onto Star Wars, of course.
Yeah.
It reminds me of my talk at DevCon. You know, I was sitting in my... I was supposed to give this, talk about this contest, right? I was introducing this contest.
I remember that.
Right? And then did this design contest, hundreds of thousands of dollars in prizes, blah, blah, blah. Right? And I had to give like a 5-minute talk or something on that. And I was going after James Meigs. Who was the editor of Popular Mechanics?
Okay.
Former Popular Mechanics. Anyway, so I'm sitting like I hadn't prepared. So I'm like sitting in my hotel room, sweating chips, trying to write stuff down, and then try and rehearse. And it's like, it just like too much stress. Didn't work. Like I cannot write scripts. I cannot.
It's tough. I mean, people that get up on stage and are engaging and funny and like have like.
Yeah.
Usually they have like rehearsed the same thing over and over. Like they know timing and stuff like that. It's very impressive.
I can tell you about. Well, I did eventually do that for another gig, but I just in the end I just tore it up and went, oh bugger it, I'll just wing it like I normally do. And sure enough, I get up there and I went, and I was standing beside the stage with James Meigs, and he had given this like prepared 1 hour to a half hour talk or whatever. It was really good, really polished. But that's his business,
Right.
Yeah, he actually does speaking engagements like that. You hire him, I saw him last night on one of these TV shows. He's like the resident, they always get him for, technical,
Right, he's
talking
like the
about
reference point.
Tech history and stuff, And so anyway, he was used to that, and he came off and he said, "Oh, have you been rehearsing your speech and stuff?" And I went, "No, I just gave up. I was going to wing it." And he went, "Are you serious?" Yeah. And he got up there. It was fine.
Yep.
Wasn't a problem. I might have rambled on a little bit, but generally I stuck to point. I thought, it just worked.
Well, that's good, man. I don't think I could wing it with RF stuff because I'm still learning. You know, when the talk's about learning it, it's not going to wing it.
Yep.
Yeah.
And then when I did the 5-minute Ignite talk, that I rehearsed.
Right. Yeah. Because when timing critical stuff.
It's timing critical. You have exactly 5 minutes, and your slides change every 15 seconds. So you literally have to rehearse that. But I did go off script a couple of times during that, and it still worked. So.
That's good.
Yeah. Anyway. Yep. Giving talks. Don't bother writing a script.
I think that's the thing, and that's the advice that eventually I got from someone. I forget who it was, but they're like, why are you giving talks about things you don't know a lot about? If you give a talk about a thing that you know a lot about, then
you shouldn't have to write.
Yeah, exactly. You just kind of put some slides down. You have some visual aids, and then you just go. And I had since done that in my talk at Teardown, which I'm not sure if I ever posted, but it was about just like streaming video and like how to record video quickly and stuff. A non-technical talk too, but like it was literally like 2 hours of slides I put together, and then it was just going through them, and it was easy.
I just gave a talk the other week at Sagan School. They invited me in for all these year 7 students, which is probably freshmen in the US, 13-year-olds. Freshman, high school, freshman.
Year 7 threw me off. I was like, 7-year-olds or not freshmen?
Year 7 is the start of high school here.
Okay, and how high does it go? To 10, 11?
7 through to 12.
Oh, that wouldn't be, that would still be middle school here.
Right.
Year 7 would be.
What's the first year of high?
In the U.S., year 9 is freshman, year 10 is sophomore, year 11 is junior, year 12 is senior. That's at least, not all schools, but that's the ones that's what I was used to. So.
Right, okay. Anyway, they're a bunch of 13-year-olds, and they had this STEM week. They were having a whole week where they had to build like a solar water heater or something.
Oh, that's cool.
And which is really cool, And anyway, so they wanted to give me the keynote welcoming thing, and they wanted me to, talk for like it was like 30 minutes or something. And it was like, okay, I can talk for 30 minutes. Anyway, so yeah, I didn't bother writing a thing. I just did some slides, you know, PowerPoint slides and stuff like that, and then I just winged it. So that's yeah, great. It works fine.
That's great.
Maybe they were bored. I don't know, but anyway.
Yeah, well, that's cool, man. What was the topic?
Renewable energy. So I talked about renewable and all that sort of stuff, and I gave them all a lump of coal. Yeah. I was so excited.
That's
you have no idea. Like I said, you know, I brought along a bag of coal, and that was like the best thing ever for them. It was like, because they had never seen or touched coal before.
Right.
So, you know, I just
now thought kids, we're going to
really
light it up and inhale it in your lungs. Really understand the implications of coal on your system.
And where do you get coal, I hear you ask? Well, there's a guy who sells them on Facebook. So,
seriously? Oh, weird.
Yeah, yeah. Guy sells them on Facebook, and I went to his house, and he just leaves the bags out the front, and you leave the cash in the letterbox, and you walk away with your bag of coal.
And
great.
What is the purpose of – what is he selling it for? Is he selling it for actual
– all of your model real steam model train enthusiasts, they get the real deal.
Right.
You know, they don't want any of that – Coke stuff, you know, it's real coal. It's not the refined Coke. It's not that smokeless Coke.
Got it.
Rubbish.
Got it. You want the real effect coming out.
Yeah. You want the real effect of
the
smoke
coming out. Steam stack.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, if people are interested in the, I put all my slides online. Cool new program for doing slide stuff.
Excellent.
Yeah. So that's all online and learn.
Yeah, but the slides don't help though. You've got to have your commentary, right?
Well, you know, it depends on how you do the slides. In my case, I didn't really, I didn't leave much room for interpretation. So the slides.
Oh, okay.
But
right.
Also, they
the
had like references and a lot of
the
links and stuff like that. So those are all on. I link all that stuff in the talk and in the slides and stuff. But yeah, RF stuff. It's been
good.
That
is handy. Like I've seen lots of presentations. Like, you know, I search for something and here's a presentation, and I go in to look at it. And it's like, oh, the slides either, and you know, there's one of two types of people who do these slides. One that just like put up a picture and there's no words, there's no text, there's no data points, there's no nothing. So it's absolutely, so the slides are useless without any technical, you know, reference of like the talk to go along with it. Others are so detailed that you simply don't need the person talking.
Right.
It's like,
right.
You know. Yeah.
Yeah, I'd kind of towards the latter, the latter side there.
The latter one there. Okay. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah.
Excellent. All right.
But
very
good. Lots of good stuff in there, and you know, stuff we talked about on the show here too. But you know, we're talking about test equipment and the whole talk was basically around like things that my assumptions that are a DC rather that don't really work at RF. And
right.
So I thought that was kind of a good way to frame things. I thought. Like cutouts in PCB traces, right? So like cutouts in ground planes, you know, to try and like keep low frequency noise. There's like a whole, I always refer to the Hank Zumbelin. So Hank has been on the show before, right? And he has a great app note about the ADCs and how to basically get low noise performance out of your ADCs and stuff like that. And then kind of like looking at, and he actually does some treatment on the RF side of things and like higher speed stuff. But like, how does that then square with higher speed techniques? And like, if you have an RF signal that's finds a cutout and a trace, it doesn't really care. It just treats that becomes an antenna effectively. And it's like, okay, that's bad idea. But so yeah, just kind of like squaring those two things together.
Yes, analog to digital converters for low frequency stuff and like RF stuff, completely different beasts.
Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I of course come from the field where, well, you know, 20 kilohertz, that was high frequency.
Right. Right. Exactly. Yeah. same.
Yeah.
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 That, I don't know if I mentioned that here too. There was a really good book that it was actually the Kindle book from like a company that was doing that does like layout for a living. And they did like it was all about like RF and high speed layout. And I can put the link in here too, but it was like basically, you know, different stack ups you have and different guidelines and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I learned a lot from that book too. So a lot of good books out
there.
Cool.
Yeah. PCBs. I'm still amazed at PCBs.
Yeah,
I'm
saw you're buying buying cheap ones,
yeah.
huh?
I am JLC again.
Yeah.
And like $2.
I'd say you're more interested
boards.
In economics. That's what you're really.
I'm more interested in the economic side
scale.
Of things, and then Scotty from Strange Parts.
Yeah.
Who's done a fact an excellent, awesome yeah. factory tour of JLC, shows you every step in the process. And he replied to my tweet saying, yeah, I think they make a loss on those
oh,
boards.
Totally.
Like,
yeah.
they don't. Is any, I need to ask a question. I asked this on Twitter, but I don't know, haven't checked if anyone's responded yet. Does anyone know of a PCB place that only does cheap prototypes?
No.
Like, I'm talking the actual factory. I'm not talking the service like dirty PCBs who don't actually make the boards themselves.
Right.
Right. I'm talking about the actual factory.
You're talking about like to see if it's like a isolated, just low cost. It's like a loss leader factory that's by standalone, you're saying?
Exactly. I want to know if it's economically possible for a factory just to do nothing else but $2 prototype, you know, boards. Because I don't think it is.
I don't think so.
I don't think it's possible.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, that's why there's limits on it too, right? You can't get... you know, the same cost per board. Well, maybe you can, but the cost per board, what is it like? So you got $2.
$5 for $2. Yeah.
Right. And like, if you did like the cost per, you know, square centimeter or whatever it is, you'd probably start to approach that with other things, but they put limits on the, how many boards you can buy like that at that price. You know, it starts to scale.
Well, it gets
fast.
Very expensive at size. If you want a large board, right, it's not $2 anymore. It's only because it's tiny.
Right,
you know, it's
exactly.
a few inches square.
Right,
right. So, yeah. Anyway, yeah.
The thing that bugs me about that is actually the specifications that like it's just hard to compete with. You know, like that's and again we're not inherently promoting the service here. You know, we're not getting paid to say anything here. We both have used it. But like, man, the minimums.
Well, there's many that do the same thing.
Sure, but like
it's not just them. There's tons of them.
But it's you get controlled impedance though too for that cost, and you get like 3.5 mm space trace. Like you know what I mean? That's just like it's a lot lower than like so. Then
you don't get controlled impedance dielectric. You don't get the special dielectric.
I'm pretty sure you do, Dave. Maybe not at the lowest price. Maybe it's just the okay. Maybe.
No, I don't think there's
okay. Maybe I'm looking at something different. But
yep. Through PCB Way, I think have a checkbox option for like a Rogers control, like
not
Rogers material.
Sorry, it's a known stack up for JLC. They have like a standard stack up.
Oh, and
so,
all of them will give you a known stack up.
Yeah.
And then you can design your controlled impedance traces.
Right,
yeah, but
right.
but I can you know when I hear the word controlled impedance, I'm thinking
you're thinking like special
you know,
materials,
controlled materials.
Got it.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, okay. That's different. Yeah, no, this is a standard FR4 of some type.
Oh. My boards have just turned up. Hang on.
Really? This is what we're doing? Anyways, Dave going to check on his boards. And, you know, so the thing that as Dave comes back here, I'll continue.
Hang on.
Yeah, you open your thing. I'm trying to talk to the audience here, Dave, instead of walking away from the microphone.
All right. My friendly DHL courier just turned up.
I still point people to PCB Shopper. I think that's still a good resource out there. And I think it's it's hard to compare everything in there. And if you've never done a PCB before as well, then it's like, you know, it's hard to kind of figure out what you should or shouldn't be putting in there. I actually went through this at the training that I helped with out in Black Hat. I did like when you're looking at those standardized ordering interfaces, it's hard to like know what does and doesn't matter. And so I don't know. I think like the
I was going to do a video on that. Yeah.
Oh yeah, that'd be great. Yeah. I mean like I think like
if like every single option there are like some that have a lot more options, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, PCB Way is
one of the ones that really have a lot more options.
Right.
And
I think as like a general thing, like if you keep your board to a standardized size, if you keep your board to like, you know, 20x20 mm, and like then you can really start to compare. You know, if it scales,
that's
like,
tiny.
I know, but it starts to scale monetarily, at least, you know, pretty linearly with features and stuff like that. And so you can at least see then it's like, oh, I clicked this thing, it just got way more expensive. that was probably bad, you know,
right?
Probably bad by design or replicability and stuff like that. You know, I usually point people at Osh Park too as like a standard just to start at, but even them, like they have, you know, like Enig is great because it's like a flatter finish usually, and you know, you usually get, it's usually higher quality on all these things, but you know, you're gonna pay for that at certain places too. So
you're paying extra. Yeah. Exactly. So. Your boards, you know, price of your boards instantly triples because you added the gold finish. Anyway, I got my boards. They are correct. They are red, and I could choose my own color. There's no price penalty for choosing your color.
Yeah.
So I chose red, of course, because it goes faster. And I've got my five boards. Here they are for $2.
Are you
it cost me $17.
Like a sports car? Is that what you mean? Like it goes faster? Like
yeah, exactly. Right. And I forgot to order the parts, so the boards came, and I've got nothing to put on them. Oops. That was dumb.
Oops. What you making? So
I'm making the 3-cent micro programmer.
Oh, nice. Okay.
Yes. This is the open source, you know, programmer thing. So I'm going to do a video on that.
Oh,
so
great.
Yeah.
Cool.
Awesome.
What are you hoping to do with those parts?
Oh, this is the actual programmer board.
Yeah.
With the actual parts. Yeah. I don't plan on doing anything. Okay. But a lot of people have asked for the video or follow-up.
Got it. Okay.
Video of, you know, like I don't want to use the company's quasi-C compiler.
Right.
And I don't want to use their you know, dodgy, like their own actual programmer. So somebody's reverse engineered the protocol and they've done their own hardware programmer, and it's now supported by an open source C compiler toolchain. So
great.
so
you're just gonna write so are there any drivers written for it yet, or is it just so simple that it doesn't need anything?
It's so simple, you don't need them. I'm just going to like flash a LED or, you know, do a spy
bus
or something.
What is the package type that the micro's in?
You can get different ones. They're in SO8 upwards. I don't think they're any smaller than SO8.
Oh,
I don't think they're available in little, you know, micro QFN thingy bobs or something like that. But yeah, no, they generally are DIP or standard... SO. So.
For 3 cents. That's pretty crazy.
3 cents. Yeah.
That's cool.
So that's cool. Great. Yeah. So anyway, I'm going to build that up. So that is terrific. I'm absolutely stunned at that. And the speed with which they do it. Like Scotty Strange Parts, he said he's of the opinion that they sort of slot these prototype boards in between the large production runs stuff like that.
Yeah. Filler panels and stuff like that.
They turned it around within hours. Like it was like it was a weekend. So they're running this factory 24/7.
Yeah.
And it was just insane. Anyway, I'm thoroughly impressed. And which brings us, speaking of China and stuff like that, I'm actually quite surprised at the impact of the trade, you know, the trade war, is that the generic word
for
it now?
Sure, yeah, I think so.
These days.
Yeah, US and China.
US-China trade war, and how no US companies are allowed to sell to any components to, you know, Huawei anymore. They're not allowed to.
I think those are separate things, but yes, the tariff is also in there.
Yeah.
So.
And there's talk of this one company in the Zhuhai province or city somewhere, and they've laid off like thousands of workers because all of a sudden, like virtually overnight, they stopped selling parts to them and they couldn't do anything anymore. And
I mean, it's
they downsized from 20,000 and now they have a skeleton crew of a few dozen.
I think some of it is a little bit reactionary, you know, like sometimes people like forecast this stuff, but at the same time, if you don't have like cash flow, you can't pay your workers. So that's kind of the choice. You know.
Wow, that to lay off 20,000.
I saw also in the States, overnight. This might have been in that CNBC article that we'll link, but there was, they're basically looking at like manufacturing jobs, which is like, I think it said it was like 8 or 10% of the US economy at least, but the growth is just flat. I think it was a different article. Yeah, so it was a different article. But basically, manufacturing was like adding like, I think like 20 or 40,000 jobs a month in the States last year at the same time, and now it's like 3,000 or something like that. I'll have to check the numbers, but it was effectively flat, whereas it was actually growing in the past. And you know, the U.S. manufacturing definitely doesn't grow as fast. It's not as big a contributor to the economy, but it's still has some growth and it's good jobs. So yeah, it sucks. It sucks real hard. I have personal experience with this. So my FedEx number got included by accident on I had gotten some dev boards from a company and they basically shipped me some dev boards from China and from the factory, and then it got used for the production stuff. And so I got the bill, not just for the like production shipping, like shipping a bunch of parts over that were pretty heavy, but then I got the tariff bill too. And I was like, whoa, what is going on here? And you know, like it was a $2,000 bill, and then it came through.
What
it was a $2,000 bill for the parts, and then 25% of that is $500. So yeah, I had to pay. What's that?
So you had to pay $500, you had to pay 25% on top of.
I mean, I didn't have to. It was all passed through.
This was for a client.
This is for a client. The client, the client was paying for it. It wasn't a huge deal,
of course.
But like, I had not.
Yeah, but it's. Yeah, yeah.
You know, when you're like, when you're buying parts, you know, like you go on DigiKey Miles or whatever, they tell you, they're like, hey, these parts are subject to tariff. You're going to be charged for them. That's fine. You know, usually you just say, oh, it's just more expensive per piece. You don't really see it, but then it's like. $500 bill, it's like, oh wow, like smacks you in the face. So damn,
when they actually itemize things like that, yeah, it really gets you,
right? Exactly. So, and so would I would I swap out the part? I don't know, like, what's the cost of swapping out a part like that? You know, it's not footprint compatible, it's not possible to go elsewhere. I don't even think I could get a part as cheap as I did there, so it's kind of just a cost of doing business thing, but still, you know, I'm sure that at scale, like, I'm sure there's a bunch of supporting engineers who are redesigning parts right now for something that's not covered by tariff, just because it really hits a bottom line.
How does this work? What if you've got a company like Microchip or Texas Instruments, any of those, which are American companies, but they get this stuff made in, you know, they've got the plant in China or whatever.
Yeah, I think it depends on, like, how much. I think there's some, like, formula for how much of this stuff. Because, like, if it's just, like, tested over there, that's not made in China, right? If it's packaged over there, I'm not sure if it's made in China. If it's, you know, percentage of components over there, then, yeah, that's made in China. And it's like, okay.
Interesting.
I just go off of, like, you know, I didn't even know this is happening, honestly. This is just FedEx sent me a bill. Because that's the other thing, is that FedEx is actually processing the dollar amount for you. You know, it's like they have inspectors in house that are doing customs or whatever.
Right.
Yeah. So.
Wow.
Tariffs.
Yeah. There's so much happening there, which you don't, unless you get hit with a bill like that, then you don't realize it's happening.
Yeah. Now, how does that work for you? Okay, so you're about to order parts, right? You're going to order parts. Yep. Say you order parts from DigiKey. Do you get tariffs?
Not that I'm aware of.
Like, if you go to digiKey.au right now, does anything say tariff on there? Like any search?
I can have a look.
Yeah, just because like it's at least coming through this, you know. So like there's kind of like a ping ponging effect that happens with world trade, right? It's like, okay,
what would be a known part that has a tariff that would have a tariff in the U.S.?
I don't know, Dave. I'm not going to tell you the one that I was just talking about because that's not on. It's not in distribution. But
yeah, but if it's on DigiKey, what's the problem?
It's not on DigiKey. It's not in distribution.
Oh, okay, right.
Let me look at an old order. I think someone like some of the caps that I've used in the past. So just like search for a 0.1 microfarad capacitor. If you see anything on the, if you search for 0.1 microfarad capacitor and you scroll down the list, you're going to see a little tag underneath it that says tariff applied.
Right.
But I don't know if that.
Oh, is it? No, that's the. It's a ROS compliant tag. Is it in the actual list?
It would be like underneath it. It'd be like underneath it.
Right. So it's underneath the part number. No, I don't see anything. Okay. All I see is like a green ROS compliant little icon.
Okay. Yeah. It's very.
Is it like a tariff icon?
No, it just says, none of these say this, damn it. What's something that I've definitely had, let me look through an old
This makes for great radio.
I know,
this
sorry.
This is just, yeah.
I don't know where they, like, this is a UI thing though too. I don't know where they put like tariff applied. You know, I think it's in the bomb thing.
I don't see anything related to tariff at all. I can't even like filter by tariff or whatever, like, you know, tariff or non-tariff.
If you search on the page, you're saying.
Yeah. I just,
oh, here we go. Yeah. So here's a Yagio 100 picofarad, 50 volt C0G. Let me send it to you.
Okay.
Because now I'm just curious if it,
yep.
Yeah, so like on this page for me at least.
All right.
Where does it say it?
I'm having a look. Okay. Minimum alternate subject. No. Import tariff may apply to this part if shipping to the United States.
Okay. So that's
there
what
you
it
go.
Is. Yeah, so it's only.
Yes.
So you don't get it, even though it's. So it's only pass through.
Yeah.
So it's not like. So I guess the distributors of the world, like the DigiKey and Mausers and Arrows and whatever, they only.
Yep.
Pass through that stuff when
no, you can't do it because it's being shipped to it's passing through the US, it's not being consumed in the US,
right,
so to speak. So yes, so the US have no right to charge a tariff on something that's
right,
effectively not coming into their country, it's just passing through.
Yeah, but if it sits on a shelf at DigiKey, you know
warehouse.
What I mean, like then it is technically sitting there, but I think it's probably maybe it's small enough it doesn't matter, you know.
But it's like you know, GST and taxes,
yeah,
it's sort of like
it
a pass through thing.
Yeah.
It's like a, you know, you
like
pass it on to your customer or whatever. It's like so yes, that's what it says. May apply to this party shipping to the United States.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So that's why, no, I can't recall ever seeing something.
Well, that's good. I mean, that's good for
it.
You. I mean,
yeah,
I think that I actually, I'd messaged with a Canadian assembly house, and I'd asked them, I was like, well, are you guys getting more business because of, you know, because of tariffs?
Hey, yeah, I was going to say, wouldn't it make sense to, like, go to a Canadian assembly house and get them to order the parts?
I mean, to actually just do the assembly for you, probably. But I think that, so...
No, not just to do the assembly, because if you order the parts and have them delivered to you and then you on-ship them to them...
Yeah, you're talking about like a,
you're gonna
like a
pay
pass-through
the tariff.
Kind of thing.
Yeah, no, just get them to order all the parts and they'll be shipped straight to Canada and they'll bypass you.
Mm-hmm.
And so there shouldn't be any tariff on those parts.
Maybe, but that might be the same thing where it's someone's going to have to pay it at some point. I don't...
Right.
Maybe that would work, but that sounds like...
Yeah, someone's at the door. Sorry.
That's all right. Yeah, so anyways, they basically had said, this Canadian manufacturer was like, you know, Canada doesn't have a ton, it has some assembly houses, but it doesn't have a ton. And in this case, they're like, well, we're military, so we're not, you know, basically they weren't low cost enough that they would even be competing in the space. So that was not something they were prepared to do. But it's interesting just seeing how all this stuff, how the tariff stuff happens in the first place. I mean, like where it actually gets applied and who does it, whatever. I think it's like if you have less than $800, you don't have to pay the tariff either. Like, so like it'll just not be triggered, like when you go through FedEx or whatever. So, but I think it is on you to actually pay the tariff, you know, if you don't know it, but I
assume you're talking to the audience.
I am.
And
yeah.
Yourself.
I'm just waiting for you to, you know,
okay.
Yeah.
My new probes turned up. I got new high voltage probe stock.
Oh, nice.
Turned up FedEx. So.
Nice, yeah.
Yeah, FedEx and DHL.
Yeah,
yeah,
we're right in the middle
well.
Of the day. We're recording at a different time than normal, so.
Yeah, we are. So.
We'll be traveling, so Dave was nice enough to reshuffle his schedule.
On my only day when I have a complete
that's right,
day
that's
available.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you know, helping the Empower audience by us prognosticating about tariffs we know nothing about.
I wasn't going to do anything anyway. I don't work for a living. I just sit there and watch YouTube videos and bum around, you know. Yep.
Well, speaking of schedules, I've been actually coordinating schedules lately. I've actually I don't know if you saw my tweet about it, but I put out a call for help to get tutors.
Yes.
Yeah.
I saw that.
So I've actually had two tutoring sessions.
Yeah, C tutorial.
Yeah, so
right.
two tutoring sessions so far and they've been great. And I was wondering, like, why don't we...
Oh, is this for you?
This is for me. Oh, yeah.
Oh,
this
I
is...
thought it was, like, for your, you know, your course.
No, this is...
You wanted someone to...
So this is me. Right. So this is working on that same project I've been talking about here. Those super low-cost components that I found, right? So I talked about the RF chip, and then I talked about the, I think the STM32 I mentioned on there. I found the cheapest STM32 on LCSC. It was like 30 cents or something crazy like that in quantity. Or like not even quantity. It's like at 100, it's 30 cents or 35 cents.
Yeah.
And I wanted some help just kind of like getting, so now I'm going to be starting a project from scratch. It's a new component. And I wanted to use the, I've got about a year before I need this thing to be out in the world. And it's a personal project. And so I was like, okay, well, I want to learn more about GCC and, you know, debugging with command line tools and stuff like that. And so basically I kind of put out the call and I've had lots of great responses so far and people, and my big thing was like, I want to pay you for your time.
Yeah.
Because, you know, some people were very nice and like said, oh, I'll do it for free.
I'll do it for next.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's harder to then say like, well, there's less motivation. And I realize that like, even for the people I'm talking to, it's not like a ton of money, but like when there is like, more of like this, well, the way I look at it, it's like music lessons effectively, you know, like I wouldn't go to a piano teacher and be like, well, you can be a lesson for free. And I'd be like, no, I'll pay for your time. I want to sit down and have scheduled time or whatever. So, why isn't this, is this a thing that I don't know about? Like, does anyone else do this? Have you ever done this?
I've never done it. No.
Yeah. I mean, it's such a thing in the music industry, right? Like if you want to get better and like have someone like to review your process, you know, like in music, you go hire a teacher and you sit down with them weekly, biweekly, whatever it is.
Yeah. No, I've never had I've never had a tutor ever.
I think what it,
for anything.
I think what it is that it does happen, but it happens at companies and it happens just naturally. Right. And so most people are like used to having, you know, a senior engineer they're working with or just even coworkers.
You would have a colleague available and they would, you know, they'd help you out.
Hey, I'm struggling with this thing. Can we sit down for a couple hours? I'll buy lunch even, or, you know, not even that. Just like, let's just go, you know, I'll sit, look over your shoulder. And it's like, I haven't had that in a while. You know, I haven't had that in a long time.
Right.
And so I was like, well, I guess I could just ask. and it's been really great. It's been really, really great. You know, like, you know, when you're like, so I always kind of seem to thrash whenever I'm like trying to find answers for things for programming online. Like, you know, like there's Stack Exchanges of the world, which are hit or miss. And then, you know, and then everybody's working on a different project. And now it's like, okay, here's the part I'm working on. Here's the stuff I'm struggling with. Here's what I want to do. And then it's just like someone being like, oh yeah, I've done that before. And I can just ask them questions. Mm. It's great. So,
although here's the thing.
Yeah.
What did you think about the difference between you spending your valuable time learning and doing this rather than, and paying for it and paying to learn to do this versus just hiring someone to actually do the job you want?
That's a good point. I had not considered that, but because this is not a project that I don't need this done. You know, it's not like this is client work.
Right.
This is,
of course.
This is me learning stuff and getting better because I think that I can then use it for client work later. You know, this is just building skills.
Got it.
And it was inspired by a couple things. Like one was, there was actually a really, really good Ben Heck video that I think I had mentioned on the show before, but it was just Ben walking through code as he coded, right? And like, I just loved it, man. It was so good. And I was like, man, I've never felt as comfortable as Ben talked while he's just talking through his code. You could tell he's just done this kind of code many, many times before. And I was like, I want to get better like that. And then the same thing with like working with Jeff at the conference, Jeff Kaiser, you know, Jeff was just walking me through RF stuff. And I was just thinking about it, like, you know, having like, and like finding mentors then, right? So I had actually reached out to a couple people. I had reached out to an RF engineer. And he was just, he's like, hey, I don't have time. And I was like, you know, that's legit. I respect that. Someone being like, I don't have time for it. And so just saying like, okay, I'm going to pay you hourly and I want to make sure that I'm paying people for their time. And I want to make sure that like, that there's a more structured relationship more than like a soft relationship of like mentoring is kind
of. Yeah, right. Of course.
I don't know. Have you ever had like a unofficial, official mentorship relationship?
Not really. No, it's kind of just like it happens when and where it happens.
Yeah.
You know, it's not kind of,
It's not like a, so some companies do this, right? They're like, you know, you're a junior engineer.
They actually have structured, you know, sessions and plans and things.
And I've asked people about that too. And they're like, well, that's the thing that companies do. It's not good.
Right. Okay. Why?
Because it's in that case, it's so forced, right? Usually it's like an assignment.
It's regimented.
You're assigned with Bill, and Bill's just going to walk you through this thing, right? It's like...
Yeah, right. And Bill probably doesn't want to do it.
Bill doesn't give a shit, you know? Like, he's just doing that because it's part of his job. Maybe it's tied to his review, whatever.
Got it. Yeah, yeah.
Now, right. I've had some mentors that have been, like, you know, ad hoc mentors just because they've been really helpful people, and it wasn't never a formalized relationship. But now I don't have that anymore either, right? There's no one I can, like, just lean on and be like, hey, can I just call you for – can I come and, like, sit in your office for a couple hours? You know, it's like, no, man. I got things to do. You don't know me. And like you said, you thought it was for my course. Like, I've offered this same service, right? I've offered this for contextual electronics people of, like, tutoring, you know, and walking people through things. And so I've experienced it on the other side, and I know that can be helpful too, because sometimes you just don't know what to Google for. You don't know what friggin' button to push. You don't know, you know, you just get like, it's like, oh, whenever you hear that, you know, there's some deep learning happening. There's some wheels turning.
Pennies dropped.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. So I don't know. I'm excited about it. I'm trying to, like, track my progress. You know, I'm trying to be regimented. I record the sessions. I take notes on things. I've got a running list of things that, like, because every time I do a set, I've done two sessions so far with two different teachers, and, like, every time I do it, I'm like, oh, I have a lot more questions now.
Of course.
But I think the hard thing is going to be the same thing that's hard when you have you ever done an instrument, Dave?
Sorry, an instrument.
Yeah, have you ever done, like, music lessons or anything like that?
Oh, right, a musical instrument. No, no.
I mean, you're a pretty good whistler, so I assume you took lessons for that. But yeah, the hard thing is always just, it's the in-between, right? The lesson is easy. It's just the,
I tried to take French lessons once.
Oh, really?
Because the company offered it.
Interesting.
And I just gave up after like 5 weeks. It was just terrible.
Okay.
Couldn't do it.
What was tough about it?
It's just... Oh, well, they, you know, I thought that I'd be going there just to learn, you know, like the basics, you know, hello, how are you? You know, it's like some basic stuff to get me by. No, they started like the formal regimented course of the feminine form and the masculine
Etre,
form.
Oh, I see. To be, je suis, tu es, il est, elle est.
I have no idea what that is. That's exactly what you're talking about.
I am, you are, that thing.
Right.
She is, he is.
I'm surprised I lasted 5 weeks, you know. Yeah. And I just gave up.
This is kind of interesting learning theory stuff too. So I'm reading a book. I started a book right now called it's like Rapid Skill Acquisition or something like that. I'll try and put it in the notes. It's basically talking about the difference. It, like, I can always tell when a book kind of jives with my personal, you know, mindset around, like, learning. It's talking about, like, skills versus like education and stuff like that, and how they don't always square. And I'm like, oh yeah, this is talking my language. And it was the same thing. Like, they actually gave an example of someone who like goes to learn Portuguese or just goes to Brazil and starts speaking and messing up and that same kind of thing, right? It sounds like you would have liked to do the latter and
do the latter. Yeah. I'm the latter person.
Yeah.
Yep.
Right. And I think that you know, like, there are some people that people respond in different ways, honestly. But I think that the hands-on approach, no surprise here, the guy that runs Contextual Electronics likes the hands-on approach. So this all kind of jives with my perspective. I think it's going to come down to me and making sure that I actually do stuff in between. But luckily, I have, like we always talk about on here, having a project is super important.
Yep,
I think,
of course.
You know, the thing that you would have helped you probably, Dave, is if you would have had a French girlfriend. Mm-hmm. That probably would have helped you learn French a lot better.
Yeah, of course.
You know? Like,
yeah, yeah. That's
especially
it.
If she didn't speak any English, or whatever you guys call English.
Strine.
Right, strine. I would be interested to hear you say French stuff with an Australian accent.
Oh, God, no. No, don't make me.
Je m'appelle Dave.
No. No.
Yeah.
It's bad. Yeah. It's really, really bad.
Yeah.
my German, when I worked in Germany, I tried.
Oh, you did?
I tried. Did I know you worked in Germany? I tried to speak German.
Really?
Yeah, I spent a couple of weeks in Germany.
Oh, let's give it. Come on, give me something here, man. What do you got?
No, just one
phrase.
I can't remember. It was so many years ago.
Well, order a beer.
I can't order a beer.
Ein Bier bitte.
See, ein Bier bitte. What?
Yeah, yeah, one beer, please.
Yeah. Right. Okay.
Ein, zwei, drei.
Yep.
Yeah, well. This would have been young Dave speaking German. This would have I would pay to see
das Inst.
Uh-huh.
David Jones or something.
Uh-huh.
No. I think that's this is David Jones.
Uh-huh. Sure.
No, yeah, no, that doesn't work. Anyway, you know, yeah, no. It was just like the look of bewilderment. Even when I had the book in front of me, sometimes I would I had the phrase I'm standing in line to get a ticket for something, you know, and like I've got the phrase book out and I'm going to nail it. Get to the front of the line and I say it and they just look at me with bewildered look.
That's not it. That's not it, man.
Yeah, no, yeah. It's like I just couldn't do it.
I mean, Google Translate these days is a wonderful thing.
Never had to use it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Can imagine.
Well, that's great. Anyway, so I'll report back in on the tutoring thing.
Excellent.
I'm excited about it. And I'm going to hopefully try it on other things, too. I'd like to get an RF tutor at some point, too, just to get better at that stuff. Someone, what was I listening to? I may have talked about it on the show 2 weeks ago, or whenever we talked last, but there was a TED Talk with the guy that wrote the checklist book, Atul Gawande, I think his name is, but the Checklist Manifesto guy, and he basically promoted the same thing, and I think this might have also inspired me on some of this stuff too, but he was basically talking about, like, there was a doctor, or a surgeon, who basically asked another surgeon to come in and just review his work, right?
Yeah.
And... I think I did talk about this on the show. But anyways, they just reviewed his work, and it basically the guy just watched him, and he's like, you know, he had flatlined in terms of learning, you know? And so when you have someone watching you and just giving you feedback, even if it doesn't have to be negative, right? It just has to be like, well, you did this. You know, you didn't use the scalpel the right way in that case. Or in our case, it's like,
right.
You know, you kept drawing 45-degree traces when you shouldn't have done that on the PCB. You know, if you and I, like, watched each other do layout, I'm sure that we'd give each other... You'd give me more feedback than you, right? But, like...
It'd be a circus. I know.
Well, I mean, I'm just saying in a best-case scenario, though, right? You know, like, having someone... Yep. Someone watch you and advise on what you are doing, even. It's just having a mirror, effectively. Like, someone mirroring what you're doing and telling you what you're doing. That can be super helpful, you know, because... I don't know about you, but I have some really bad habits, and so just having some feedback on that can, like, really improve your everyday stuff. And I think it was in that TED Talk too, they talked about, like, you know, musicians do this their entire career. It's not like a thing that they do just at the beginning. They do it their entire career, and so you know, it's great. I think one of the examples was, like, Itzhak Perlman. His wife actually was a classical violinist as well, and she would just sit in the audience and just give him feedback on, like, how he sounded different that day, you know, that kind of thing. So, just try not to.
I'm not entirely convinced this works for engineers. Engineers are solitary creatures.
Well, there is that, and I think the big thing is that, like, ego is, like, huge, huge piece here, right? Like, so I was stressed just thinking about, like, whether I was going to. Put it out on Twitter that I was looking for help, you know, but
right.
But you got to kind of let your ego go a little bit, and it's just tough. It's tough having people tell me things that I'm bad at, even if they're being nice about it.
Yep.
So I'd love feedback though. If there's feedback on how people, if there are other people that are doing this too, I'd love to hear about it because there might be a space for it. Maybe there's other people that are willing to mentor or willing to tutor.
I'm sure there's no shortage of people on those. Elancey,
yeah, but I don't want
freelancey websites. You know,
that's a little different. Like, I think, you know, this is more like, this is relationship based still. I think, you know, it's still like,
right.
And this is something I've considered for Contextual Electronics at some point or another. You know, like, just to get experts together and, you know, some people, like, so someone who's like, right, you are probably too busy for this, but someone who's in your spot, right, who's been doing layout a long time, you might want to help someone out, or, you know, get paid to do tutoring, right. But you probably don't want to teach someone getting to Blinky, right? You want to teach them high speed, you know, impedance matching type stuff, right? And things like that, and like advanced topics versus more beginner topics. I've said enough about this, so I will have more in the future, hopefully. So.
Excellent.
Yeah.
All right. Should we get back to this? Should we go through the list?
Sure. I don't know how much stuff there is.
We've only got 10 minutes left. Well, I added a couple on there. One which I did a video about.
Which one? The Vic?
Which was the Engineers Australia in Victoria mm-hmm. now. They're trying to protect the word professional, the word professional engineer
yeah.
now. They just, Victorian government just passed a new bill, which makes it basically illegal under penalty of an $80,000 fine if you call yourself a professional engineer and you're not registered
right.
through the who knows who now, right? it's unclear how and why you get this magical registration.
Yeah, I mean, this also exists in the States, though, right? I mean, there's professional engineering designation that you can't...
Yeah, but here we've always had chartered engineer. That mm-hmm. is protected. Well, it's not... I don't think it's protected by a bill as such. It's just, I don't know. It might be. I haven't looked into the details of that. But it's always been called chartered engineer. And I made the argument in my video that, right, it is still not illegal anywhere in this country, including Victoria, to call yourself an engineer.
Right, right.
Regardless of certification or qualification, right? But when you put the word professional in front of it, then it becomes illegal? That is ridiculous. The word professional
implies your vocation. Well, luckily, Dave, I've never called myself a professional anything, so...
yeah, but no, come on. Let's be serious, right? It involves... That word implies that's your vocation.
Yeah, I mean,
that's what you do for a living.
I think you're right.
It's just insane.
But I think that it's
a bad term to try and protect.
It's a trademark thing, right? I think it's too broad of a term. You're saying.
Yes. Yes.
Right.
Totally.
I think the
chartered engineer. Fine. Yeah. You know, nobody calls themselves a chartered engineer. You know, so that's this like obscure specific thing. Okay, if you want to try and protect that, mm-hmm, go for mm-hmm, it. Mm-hmm. Right, but it just. Adding the word professional in front of it's absolutely ridiculous.
I mean, well,
anyway,
I think that's a good question, though. So, like, would you let's go to the absurd side of things. Would you say that anyone should be able to call themselves an engineer as well? Like, if they say they were...
If that's your vocation, yes.
What if they were actively
do
doing harm?
Living?
You know what I mean? Like, I'm just playing devil's advocate here, probably not very well, but...
Okay, no, fine. I support it for anything involving public... You know, like buildings,
sure,
bridges,
sure.
or infrastructure, construction, all that sort of stuff. I think everyone probably agrees that, you've got to be certified and approved to,
right. things fall down, you're saying.
Yeah, exactly. but just some nobody electronics engineer working in some, laying out their board for some industrial widget that's going to be used in a, like, factory that, no, like, it just, like... It's silly.
Yeah.
Right?
I mean, I could see, I could see as things continue to get more and more complex, I could see that there's less understanding of what's going on, too. I think that people have fear about, what an engineer is and does and whatever. I think it's, some of it's just public perception, right?
Yes, but the problem is, my problem is electronics engineering, right? And this bill came about because they were trying to fix. We've got a huge scandal in this country at the moment about construction, building construction, and that's where this bill comes from. But they've put the wording in the bill is so broad that it encompasses virtually. They literally say like in any other type of engineer, this will include. So in theory, this includes software engineers, network engineers, blah. A whole swag of people. And if you look into the technical details, it's like if you've only got a 3-year qualification or a 2-year networking qualification or some other thing, you can't even register.
Right, right.
It's like they've just like used this one bill to encompass all forms of engineering. It's insanity. It's absolutely. I'd support this bill if it just said, this is limited to the construction and infrastructure industry or something like that.
Mm.
Fine, beauty.
What about? I mean, well, I guess. Yeah, maybe high power, like power line type stuff might be.
Oh, yeah, no, power infrastructure, power lines, power grid, stuff like that.
Yeah,
okay,
yeah,
fine.
I mean, at a certain point, though, someone has to decide where those lines are drawn, though, too, right? I mean, that's the other hard thing, is that at some point, someone's going to be like, well...
Yeah, but we've been operating, but there's been no issue with this operating in electronics engineers, either unqualified ones or ones that aren't certified, because nobody in Australia, virtually nobody... in the electronics field is a member of the Institute of Engineers. It's just not a thing.
Got it, yeah.
right? It's just, you know, it's more for your, you know, your civil engineers and stuff like that.
I mean, that's that's what it comes down to. It's lobbying groups, right? For sure. I mean, it's lobbying groups who basically are protecting the trade. Same thing happens in the medical field. Same thing happens in, other fields. I guess the real estate fields. Realtor is a protected term, at least in the States.
You have to
put the all rights reserved after Realtor. It's crazy.
Anyway, I know this is common in other countries, but Australia, for example, has been operating just fine for, you know, generations, and now they want to protect electronics.
How would this practically impact you? You're saying that this would.
Well, it doesn't at the moment because I'm not in Victoria. But if I was in Victoria, the only way it would impact me is if I used the word professional engineer in my resume or on my website or something like that, or, you know, that I'm offering professional engineering services. I can't use the word professional. That is now protected under a bill in one state here, but it will eventually come here, I'm sure.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. I think that's
Well, no, and engineers at both the Engineers Australia and this other professional engineering body, they're pushing for it in all the other states.
I see. Okay, so this is just the toehold.
Oh, yes, this is the wedge. It's just, they just want to encompass everything.
I mean, yeah, it's just insane. I mean, like, okay, so again, to play the devil's advocate here, the reason that people do this kind of thing is also because it, you know, protectionism around careers like this also drives up wages, right? Like in a positive way.
That's the argument one of these companies one of these lobbies made.
Right.
Yeah. Is that you'll get on average an extra $25,000 a year if you register as a professional engineer.
Right. Because then there's regulations on that. I mean, it drives the cost up everywhere else, right? So then, you know, charging government entities who require that kind of thing, then that price goes up, blah, blah, blah. Yep. There's more handling fees and whatever else. But that is a soft benefit, not a soft benefit, it's a real benefit, right? For, you know, like that's why my friends who are doctors get paid a lot, at least in the States, because they have to go through all the...
Well, it's not necessarily a real benefit. It doesn't mean it's actually real.
It's real in their bank account.
It doesn't mean it actually happens in practice.
Sure. What do you mean by that?
It doesn't mean that if you're certified that you're going to get paid $25,000 more. Their
those
own,
are averages. You're right.
Shock horror! Their own internal study shows that you'll get $25,000 more if you're a professional engineer. Yeah, right. And they're the ones selling the they're the ones selling the certification.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. Right. And they're the ones who push for it in Parliament. Yep. Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Oh, I actually didn't tell you. I have some news. I think, what was it, our first episode? Maybe in our first episode or second or third. Maybe I told you this, but I'm a mole. I'm a mole now. I'm on the inside. I'm a member of the IEEE.
Oh, you finally joined.
I did, yeah.
Ah, right. Why?
For a single reason. There is a really good consulting survey they do, and it was enough for me to be like, okay, I'll do it. I want to know what other people get paid. Everybody, you know, kind of puts in their info.
Oh, so you joined to get access to this
to participate in the survey and to get it, yeah.
And to get the results, right.
And I could have bought the report for like a little bit less. I think it was like $80 to buy the report, but it's like $100 per.
Right, okay. Usually these reports are a couple hundred bucks or something.
And so, so I'm an IEEE member.
Right.
Not card carrying,
well
but
I am literally card carrying.
Oh, you are? Okay, okay. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's in my wallet.
Nice.
Yeah, well, an old one's in my wallet. I don't know where the new one is.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. Like,
okay, I just looked in my wallet the other day. I think it's 2012 is the card I've literally got in my wallet.
I mean, but like it's a similar thing. They don't fight for the professional engineering side of things, but they do fight for, you know, there's a lobbying component to IEEE as well, and they, you know, they push for different,
and they do standards,
yeah, exactly, and stuff like that,
and talks and things like that. They all,
I learned today, do you know what Wi-Fi stands for? I was looking at this there's another like wireless thing I was looking at, and it something brought up Wi-Fi, and I was like, what does Wi-Fi stand for? Do you know what it stands for?
Not offhand.
Absolutely.
No.
Nothing. Wi-Fi is
absolutely
yeah
nothing.
It's actually a play on hi-fi, but it's not actually wireless fidelity. people, like, apparently, like, there's, like, arguments about it, but it's not, like, it's right, meant to just right. be, like, Wi-Fi, hi-fi, you know, like that.
I may have a potential video coming up. I'm going to have to travel for Uh-oh. It, but on this topic.
On Wi-Fi? Oh, this is because Wi-Fi was invented at Cicero. CSIRO?
Yep. And I may have, I'm negotiating access to certain things.
Right. And so Australia got a huge payout from that. I was obviously reading the wiki page, which I will be linking here today.
Yeah,
but Australia got a huge, or CSIRO, how do you say it? Do you say
CSIRO.
Okay, yeah. They got a huge payout because of all this patent infringement. They are known as the early thing there, the early inventors of Wi-Fi, which is, you know, that's like saying like you're the microprocessor, you know, it's like there's how many components within a microprocessor, but obviously the patents of the microprocessor, you know what I mean? Like it's a component thing, but whatever. Go Australia, you know, that's great.
Anyway, we haven't done anything with the money, though.
Oh, really? Okay.
They just cut wages. They just cut staff at CSIRO, you know, instead of, anyway, typical.
Well, let's end on a happy note here. Did you see the thing that Bumble Monk posted on the Reddit about how to pronounce hexadecimal numbers? Since we were talking about language earlier today. So this is hexadecimal. They actually have...
Antine, Betine.
That's right.
Christine, Dotton, Ernstine, Fostine, Betty.
So wait,
Christy,
you have to say the actual, like, okay. these are.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, these are different.
So if it's hexadecimal B0, right. It's Betty.
That's right. So it would be like
that actually has a name. F0 is Frosty.
Right.
What?
I think this would, the better way to say it is like if you're counting in hex, right? You would say like it'd be 10, 11, 12, 13, whatever, all the way up to 1A, and then at 1A, although I don't know if you say, I guess you say like 19 hex, right? But 19 hex would then go to 1A, which would be Antine. That's 1A, and then Betine, and then 1C, Christine. Dot teen. That's 1A, 1B, 1C, 1D.
Someone who wrote this book was taking the piss.
I mean,
right?
Like that. It's ridiculous. Like, but but I mean, I guess if you're operating like people who like used to operate in all app codes, I mean, like, you know, you probably got to know it pretty well. So
please let us know in the comments if you actually worked. This would be way back in the Apollo era or something like that. You know, when everyone was encoding, you know, hexadecimal or octal or something like that. Let us know if this was a thing.
F2 is Frosty 2. A01C is Auntie Christine.
and DEAF, as in deaf, but in hexadecimal, DEAF, the hexadecimal, is Dottie Ernest Auntie Frost. What?
We could just pull... We're going to definitely use this as the label for the show, I think.
Oh, that's just... Yeah.
Dottie Ernest Antifrost.
What the hell?
That's great.
They're taking the piss.
If there is someone out there that can tutor us in how to do, what is this even called?
Chris will pay you in multi-layer ceramic
caps.
That's
right. This is in the Data Motion magazine from 1968. So that's great.
Brilliant. Anyway. Yeah.
All right, Dave. We'll talk to you next week.
We're out of here. Catch you next time.